Hello and welcome to addclasses.com. My name is Tara McGillicuddy and I am the director of addclasses.com. Tonight I would like to welcome you to our webinar, Your Unique Operating System, Harnessing Strengths to Manage ADHD Challenges with Lynn Idris. So welcome, Lynn, and I'm going to hand everything over to you right now. And towards the end of the hour, we're going to be opening it for questions. So if you have a question right now, write it down, because usually what happens is our presenter will answer a lot of the questions during the webinar itself. But we will open them up towards the end of the hour, and you can type your question in at the bottom of the webcast page. So welcome, Lynn.
Thank you, Taryn. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. It's been a while since I've done one of these webinars for ADD classes. So again, my name is Lynn Idris, and as a productivity and ADHD coach, I help overwhelmed professionals reduce procrastination, improve time management, and get more done with less effort so that they have more time, more energy, and even more money for what they love most. But I'm a woman with ADD myself, too, so I have been where so many of my clients are and have come out the other side, so to speak. I've gone from living in that constant state of chaos and underperformance that so many of us struggle with to living a life of much more achievement and fulfillment, and I know you can share the same success yourself. You can learn more about me and what I do and the programs and services I offer at my website, and that's coachingadvantages.com. And when you sign up on my website or text the keyword HACK, H-A-C-K, to 444-999, I'll send you my 7 foolproof productivity hacks to help you add hours of free time to your weeks by investing just a few smart minutes each day. In this webinar, I'm going to give you the 5 keys to harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenges. And these keys are absolutely fundamental to the work I do with my private clients in my coaching practice. And each key is important in and of itself, but when you put them all together, the sky really is the limit. So as I mentioned earlier, I am a woman with ADD myself, so I've lived with the struggles so many of you are having right now. You know, I always knew I was smart enough to accomplish more than I was. I always knew I had more potential than how I was showing up. But my struggles with disorganization and poor time management and weak follow-through kept me from performing at the level of my abilities consistently. And like many of you, you know, I would have these glimpses, these like moments when I could really sort of pull my ADD stuff together, but they never really lasted long enough to be able to stick. So I thought I was just undisciplined. You know, I told myself I was lazy. I told myself I needed to try harder and work harder. But honestly, it seemed like I already was working a lot harder than everybody around me just to keep my head above water. You know, I stayed later at work. I worked through my lunches. I took lots of work home. You know, I kept trying and I kept working harder and harder all the time. And I felt like I was barely moving forward at work or at home. And I know that sounds familiar to a lot of you. And I used to say that I felt like I spent my days spinning around with one shoe nailed to the floor, you know, hardworking and exhausting, but with very little to show for all that effort at the end of every day. And meanwhile, you know, the guy in the office next to me was leaving work on time and taking a lunch break every day and getting recognized and promoted. And the girl on the other side of me was going to the gym at lunch regularly or meeting friends after work and having what looked like a great personal life and moving her career forward while I kept plugging away with very little and very slow advancement. So I knew they were no smarter than I was, right? I knew that they weren't really working harder than I was, but they made it look so stinking easy. But here's what I learned. You know, they weren't working harder than I was, but they were working smarter. And eventually, I figured out how to work smarter myself, too. Because one of the only differences between you and the people you see who get everything done, you know, end their days early and have amazing lives is that they're using their strengths and what I call their UOS, or their unique operating system, and you're not. So what I want to start to show you how to start doing in this webinar is how to figure out how to do that for yourself and how to put it into practice. Because in my 12 years of working with people from all professions and all walks of life as a ADHD and productivity coach, I've learned that it's really not about imposing a technique or a solution from the outside. It's about finding out how you operate best based on your strengths and using that to like maximize your day and organize your life. Because when you're able to do that, everything can turn around. So I want to go ahead and get started, and I'm going to do things a little bit differently. I'm going to give you the five keys first, and then I'll expand upon them and fill in the blanks, so to speak. And if you have downloaded the handout, you can literally fill in the blanks as we go as well. Handouts always help me sort of stay focused. I thought that might be helpful for some of you. So the five keys to harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenges are, number one, education. Number two, support and accountability. Number three, what I call the thinking piece. Number four, an engineering perspective. And number five, your unique operating system, or what I call your UOS. And I'll explain each of these in detail, give you some tips on how to make them work for you, and give you a way to put it into practice if you hang on with me to the end. So as I said, key one is education or knowledge. So you need to understand your ADHD brain and why you struggle where you do. You know, we know that differences in structure, functionality, and neurochemicals all come into play with ADHD, right? And you don't need to be a doctor or a scientist to understand ADHD well enough. But the first and fundamental key to overcoming your challenges is understanding your unique brain. When you don't understand your brain and the root of your challenges, you can't advocate for yourself effectively. You misunderstand yourself, so you can't help others who misunderstand you to understand you better. But you can't help others understand what you need so that they can give it to you either. So when you don't understand why you struggle where you struggle, you also blame your challenges on things like laziness, weakness, lack of willpower, poor work ethic, and other moral judgments, you know, and your self-esteem suffers over time. So when you don't understand your brain and the root of your challenges, you live reactively instead of proactively, putting out fires, dealing with crisis after crisis, and trying to do damage control all the time. You know, this is so important. As long as you're not really understanding why you struggle where you struggle, you're going to be stuck feeling shame and blaming your challenges on some sort of, you know, moral weakness or some sort of moral or character flaw. And you can't make lasting changes that way. So when you can get yourself, when you really get yourself, you can stop the blame and the shame, you can be proactive in your problem solving, you can repair your self-esteem, which is huge because that's how you can reach your potential. So you need to understand ADHD in general and how it's showing up in you as an individual. Well, I always say that your ADHD is as unique as your thumbprint, and I'll explain why as we go on. So I'm going to give you some fundamental things you need to understand about your ADHD brain. And again, you don't need to be a doctor or a scientist to understand your brain well enough. So I'm going to run through these things very quickly because this really isn't the focus of the webinar, but it is important. If you want to learn more about each one of these cornerstones of ADHD knowledge, I call them, then you can check out articles on my website. You can check out the ADHD Support Talk Radio podcast. You can check out the addclasses.com audio library. They're all great resources. So the fundamental things you need to understand about your ADHD brain are, first, you need to understand attention in ADHD. Next, you need to understand the dopamine connection in individuals with ADHD. And finally, understanding the role of stimulation and interest to ADHD is also crucial. So let's start with understanding ADHD and attention. You know, ADHD isn't really a deficit of attention, as the clinical name of the condition implies, right? It's actually a deficit in our ability to regulate our attention. So we can have a lack of attention in certain situations, but a surplus or too much attention in others. So understanding attention and ADHD is crucial. Again, ADHD isn't really a deficit in attention. It's a deficit in our ability to regulate our attention. And this struggle to regulate our attention and focus also plays a part in our memory. I've done several podcast episodes on ADHD Support Talk Radio on memory and ADHD that are worth a listen to if you don't have a good understanding of this piece and how your ability to regulate your attention and your focus impact your memory. But it's all tied together to our difficulty with regulating our attention and our focus, again, not a so-called deficit in our attention. So I like to, when I talk with clients about this, I like to explain or talk a little bit about what it takes to pay attention. It sounds really simple superficially, but it's really not. The attention process is, you know, composed of a bunch of different skills or steps. First, we must choose or select the right thing to pay attention to for the current circumstances, right? So we have to decide what's relevant in the moment and what we're going to pay attention to. Then we must focus on the one thing we've chosen to pay attention to. we'll call that the stimulus, right? Then we have to sustain or maintain our attention to that one appropriate thing we focused on. And we have to resist distractions. And we have to continue resisting distractions and maintaining focus for as long as is necessary for that particular situation, right? And the distractions that come up, the distractions we need to resist in order to maintain our focus can be more than just things outside of us. They could be more than just external stimuli. They can be something going on inside us too, like physical or emotional feelings, memories, thoughts, ideas, all of those things are distractions that we may need to be resisting when we're trying to pay attention. And then finally, we need to be able to shift or change our focus appropriately when it's an appropriate time to make that change or make that shift, to transition from one subject of focus or one stimuli to another at the appropriate time. Seriously. I mean, that's a lot of steps. There's a lot going on underneath paying attention. And it sort of like exhausts my ADD brain just thinking about what it takes to pay attention. That's really important to understand, right? That ADHD is not a deficit of attention. It's difficulty with regulation. And all of those steps that it takes to pay attention to something are all pieces and parts of what we need to regulate. Next, you need to understand the dopamine connection in individuals with ADHD. You know, scientists have found that individuals with ADHD are deficient in the brain chemical dopamine, which is the neurotransmitter that's responsible for feelings of motivation. So dopamine is the motivation brain chemical. Research has shown that because the ADHD brain is dopamine deficient, it's much harder for an individual with ADHD to create their own interest in something or feel motivated about something that isn't otherwise stimulating on its own for that individual, which makes it harder for us, again, to feel motivated when that thing lacks interest or stimulation naturally for us. It's not a choice. It's not a manipulation. It's a dopamine thing. But that doesn't mean you're forever doomed to be at the mercy of your brain chemistry or that our lack of motivation really should let us off the hook from performing at the level of our abilities. There are plenty of things we can do to increase dopamine production and work around our motivation struggles. It's something I work on with my clients every single day. You really don't need motivation to take action. It makes it easier, of course, but you really don't need motivation. You need movement. And that's a whole other topic I could probably do an entire webinar on. Next, you really need to understand the role of stimulation in ADHD. And this is huge. This one is so important. And I've already started to touch on it, but one of the complaints I often hear about those of us with ADD and ADHD is, you know, how come he or she has no problem focusing on X, you know, something they like, but can't seem to take care of Y? So I've heard variations of this complaint from frustrated teachers, parents, partners of individuals with ADHD, and it usually centers around the contrast between the individual's struggle to do things they don't like or things that they don't find inherently interesting, like homework, paperwork, chores, you know, it's different for every individual. And then their ability to focus on other things they do like or find interesting, like video games or something on the web or reading or, you know, whatever, golf, whatever it is for that individual. It's really no wonder that people get confused when an individual with a so-called attention deficit can focus like there's nothing else in the world when they're doing some things, but they can't seem to manage to focus enough to do other things. So to sum it all up, really, ADHD is all about stimulation and interest, and this is so important to understand. But to make it a little bit more confusing, stimulation and interest are individual, they're situational, and they're relative, and stimulation and interest have a relatively short shelf life. You know, I'm not a doctor, but here's how I explain it in simple sort of, you know, layman's terms. ADHD or ADD is a condition caused by understimulation in certain areas of the brain. Specifically, individuals with ADHD have insufficient neurotransmitter activity in the parts of the brain that are responsible for regulating things like interest and attention, among other functions, right? We've seen on brain scans since the 1990s that certain areas of the ADHD brain show lower levels of activity than those areas do for other people. So these underactive areas can be fired up, so to speak, with the increased dopamine activity that we need by things that are stimulating to that particular individual. whether it's medication or exercise or some other kind of external stimulant like a deadline or a crisis or something that the individual finds interesting or exciting. But here's where it gets, you know, a little more confusing. Interest is subjective. So what's interesting or stimulating to one person is very individual to that person, and what's interesting to you is very unique to you. And this is one of the reasons why, I always say your ADD is as unique as your thumbprint. My ADD brain could never get fired up by my son's shoot 'em up video games, just like his ADD brain could never get fired up by writing some ADD presentation or blog or something like that. But you also need to keep in mind that interest and stimulation, or interest is, I use those words interchangeably in case I probably should have said that before. So I use interest and stimulation interchangeably when I'm talking about ADHD. So interest is also situational and relative. So what's stimulating at one given moment can depend on whatever else is going on inside or around us. So comparatively, like a paperwork or a tax return is completely unstimulating to an individual with ADHD and can be really difficult for them to act on, can all of a sudden, you know, feel more stimulating or more interesting and have more dopamine around it when something else comes into play. So like a looming deadline, right? So being faced with another task that's less interesting or less motivating than the original task can also make that original task seem slightly more stimulating or slightly more interesting. I hope that makes sense. And again, I'm happy to answer questions at the end of this. I'm not sure I said that really clearly, but your level of interest or your level of stimulation in something really is comparative. So if you're looking or dealing with something or dreading something that is even less interesting or less stimulating, that original thing can sort of grow in interest and stimulation a little bit by comparison. It gets really confusing sometimes. And it's really important to understand that one thing can in fact affect the way you feel about the level of interest in something else, right? Dusting is way down there on the interest scale for me. Really, anything cleaning is way down there on the interest scale for me. But if I'm faced with something even lower on my interest scale, like filing or paperwork, dusting can become significantly more stimulating by comparison. So I always joke, and my family always teases me, that if I'm walking around the house with a duster, there's a good chance they need to send me back to my office because there's something waiting for me in my office, whether it's a project or some paperwork or whatever. Because compared to paperwork, dusting may become relatively more stimulating for me in that given moment. So I hope that makes sense. And then finally, remember that interest has a limited shelf life. So what's interesting or stimulating may not last forever. So things that are new or novel can have some inherent stimulation to them just because they're new or novel. Just the newness itself makes it a little more interesting or a little bit more stimulating. And I often call them sometimes something shiny, right? So unfortunately, you know, what's new doesn't last forever. So we have to remember that new and novel are shiny, but even the shiniest things can lose their sparkle and lose their appeal over time. And then, of course, we need to find ways to change things up ever so slightly to make them a little shiny all over again, but I'll talk more about that a little bit later. Okay, so that's key number one, education or knowledge. And, of course, there's more, but that's really, those are sort of like the cornerstone things that I think it's really important for my clients to understand. And I spent a lot of time on that key, but it is a really important one. So the second key to harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenges is support and accountability. And this is also very individual. So having the right kind of support in place can be a game changer. We all perform better when we feel supported and valued and appreciated, right? And it's human nature. And the right kind of accountability can provide an added layer of stimulation to make doing the most mundane or boring of tasks much easier for us. The right kind of support and the right kind of accountability can be tremendously helpful in our performance, but you really have to learn what works best for you, and you have to find your sort of sweet spot for support and accountability, again, that works for you. And remember, not everybody is a good source of support for you, and not everybody is a good source of accountability for you. When you don't have the right support or when you don't have the right accountability, you can feel criticized, you can feel judged, you can feel unmotivated. You can feel that blame and shame I'm always talking about. But with the right kind of support and the right kind of accountability for you, you can feel competent and capable. You can feel motivated and energized. You can be willing to take on new challenges and stretch your limitations. You can be more able to grow. And that's huge. So when I'm working with a private client, support and accountability are really important parts of our coaching process. Of course, as their coach, I provide much-needed support and accountability for my clients, but I also work with them to help figure out what kind of support and accountability helps them the most and learn how to put it in place for themselves outside of our coaching relationship so that they don't just learn to rely on me. That's not what we're shooting for. So learning what kind of support and accountability work best for you can be a game changer, and learning how to put it in place for yourself and how to ask for what you need is essential. So pay attention to how you feel and how you respond when certain people provide support and accountability to you in different ways. So much of this stuff really is about self-awareness. So if you know what kind of support and accountability you need and how it works best for you, you can start to ask for it and you can start to put it in place for yourself. So key one was education or knowledge. Key two is support and accountability. And that brings me to the third key to harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenges. And that is what I call the thinking piece. So this piece is fundamental to making changes that last for the long haul. If I skipped this part and went straight to tools and systems and tricks and tips and things like that with my clients, even if I helped them master all the other essential keys, they'd likely end up right back where they started pretty darn quickly. And I know every single person listening to this webinar has already put some great systems into place at some point and use some really great tools and found some really great ways of doing things that you really honestly thought in your heart of hearts were going to make all the difference for you, probably many times before. But here you are again, you're listening to me, trying to find what's going to work for you. But nothing is going to help, really help for the long haul if you don't get your own head out of the way. So when I'm talking about what I call the thinking piece, I'm talking about your perspective, your beliefs, and how you think and feel about yourself and your world around you, especially your challenges. And I know, you know, you've tried lots of different ways. You've tried lots of different tools, techniques, and systems to try to make positive changes in your life. But when we focus strictly on changing our behavior and the way we do things, those changes don't last, and we're left once again feeling like it's our fault, you know, feeling like we failed again, feeling like there's something wrong with us, with our character, with our willpower that makes us not able to stick to things for the long haul. And it's that thinking over time that keeps us stuck. You know, lasting change has to start from the inside. So I'm going to explain a few important constructs that may be nothing new to some of you, but they're really important to give some thought. So the first construct is to pay attention to what you're paying attention to. A good coach will have been trained to pick up on the negative thoughts and limiting beliefs, that's what we call them in coaching, that the client has, and to help the client learn to challenge and change those thoughts and those beliefs to be more constructive and to be less limiting so that they can start to make changes. So over time, this changes the client's perspective on themselves and on the world around them and makes them more open to possibilities and to lasting change. Sounds kind of woo-woo, but hang in there with me. You really need to start to pay attention to what you're paying attention to, because it's also true that what you pay attention to grows. So what you pay attention to generates energy. And in layman's terms, again, it sort of burns a neural pathway in your brain. So the more often you think the same sort of thought, the neural pathways to that thought sort of get stronger. Kind of like when you make a trail through the grass, right? The more you walk the trail, the more it gets defined and the easier it is to travel that same trail or path over time. So the more you pay attention to something, the more you notice it, and the more easily you notice similar kinds of things. It's a fundamental premise of attention, and it affects us on a very practical level. And I'm going to give you a simple example, and if you've heard me talk about this before, you know, I use this one a lot. But, you know, imagine you're shopping, right? I think this has probably happened to all of us at some point or another. And all of a sudden, like, for some reason, you notice the song that's playing in the background on the sound system. Somehow it catches your attention. Once you notice the song, it sort of becomes more predominant, right? It seems louder. You sort of hear it more clearly. And it was there all along, though, in the background, right? They didn't turn it up. Your focused attention on it makes your perception of it seem like it's louder. So the song seems to expand in your attention. And it's not magic, and it's not some metaphysical manifestation of louder music. It's a function of your focus and your attention and how your brain sort of latches on to those particular neural pathways of the song. So once your focus shifts to something else, the song fades back into the background and your perspective has shifted and it's no longer pulling your attention. So it's sort of, you know, gone back into the background and it's no longer the focus. I'm sure you get the point, but what you pay attention to grows for sure, but you actually get to choose what you let yourself pay attention to. Make sense? So the next construct to be aware of when it comes to the thinking piece is what we call your story. And again, this sounds woo-woo, but it's a fundamental premise of coaching, and it's actually very practical. So over time, when we focus our attention on the same kinds of thoughts repeatedly, it changes the way we see things. It changes the way we see ourselves, and it sort of colors what we perceive as our reality. So over time, our perception of our experiences and how we think about them become our beliefs. And these beliefs change and they sort of color, tint the way we see ourselves and the world around us, and they become what we call in coaching our story. So your story is like the slightly tinted lens through which you view everything. And your story may be serving you well, so it may be in alignment with what you want out of your life. It may be helping you move forward, or it may be holding you back in many ways. And again, I know some of this stuff seems a little out there, but it's really important to understand because these constructs impact your thinking on a practical level every single day, and your thinking impacts your performance. So the next construct is that thoughts are not facts. It's essential to start thinking about what you're thinking as something that is not necessarily true, right? It's not necessarily a fact. I tell my clients all the time, just because you think it doesn't mean it's true. We think things all the time that are not true, and it's really horrible to hear some of the things my clients think or say about themselves. But I know I've done it myself too, and every once in a while I'll catch myself kind of going down one of those old familiar paths. Things like, if only I weren't so lazy, or I'm such a loser, or worse, right? These are things they wouldn't dare say to another human being, but they think them about themselves, and they say them to themselves every single day over and over and over again. And the same thing goes for feelings. Feelings are not facts either. We actually get to choose how we feel, just like we get to choose what thoughts stick around and what we focus on. So here's a common example. This is one of my favorites, and this is something I actually do practically on an everyday basis, like when somebody's working on my last nerve. So have you ever noticed that someone has an annoying habit of some sort? You know, maybe they sniff, or they pop their gum, or they crack their knuckles, or they have some sort of, you know, gesture or some sort of something that really works on your nerves. So once you notice that annoying habit or tick or whatever it is, they may seem to do it much more often. And the way you feel when you're around them becomes more negative. Most likely, they're not intentionally trying to drive you batty by doing it more in your presence, but your attention has just latched onto it and your focus on it has expanded, right? Just like the music in the background at the store. But you have some choice here. So what if instead you choose to focus on a positive trait of that same person? Maybe their smile, maybe his laugh, maybe how focused she is on you when you talk to her. You know, bingo, your perspective changes. And that positive thing you choose to focus on becomes predominant if you let it. And your feelings can change accordingly. You know, you can see more of that smile. You start to hear more of that laugh. You start to feel good about them, and you start to feel good when you're around them. And you've just succeeded in changing your feelings too. So think about it and give it a try with the people closest to you. It's very powerful stuff. It's an absolutely fundamental and incredibly important part of coaching to help our clients address their thinking so that they can start to make the changes they want to make and to make them last. And there are some pretty typical ADD thought barriers that are an important part of the thinking piece that definitely impact our performance as well, and they're important to be aware of. And these are on the handout. So first, black and white thinking or all or nothing thinking is pretty common with ADHD, and you've probably heard those expressions before. But our natural tendency seems to be sometimes to see opposite sides of certain things and not necessarily what's in between, right? We often see things in very absolute terms, which sometimes, you know, isn't helping us. For example, we see where we are right now and we see where we want to be. I call this, you know, focusing on the gap, because we're focusing on the presence of a gap. We're focusing on the fact that we're not where we want to be, but we tend not to focus on the in-between stuff, like the progress we're making in that space in between where we are and where we want to be, on the progress we're making on closing the gap. Sometimes we only see one way of doing things or not doing them at all, when there's usually a lot of really good possibility in that middle area. You know, I often tell my clients that we automatically need to do what I call look for the gray. You know, training yourself to look at that area in between, into that middle, into that gray area between the black and the white, can be really helpful in trying to find creative ways to solve your problems and see simple workarounds when you're stuck. You know, I often say there's gold in the gray. Our all-or-nothing thoughts tend to use absolute or extreme terms, like always, never, you know, every time, and things like that. So pay attention to your thoughts. Pay attention to the language you use, either internally or externally, you know, in your thoughts or actually out loud. And notice when you use those kinds of absolute phrases or have that kind of thinking. You know, when you say things like always or never or every time or, you know, that's a sign that you have some beliefs that need to be addressed. Because if you believe deep down that you're going to fail, inevitably you're going to be right. And that all or nothing black and white thinking also shows up for my clients in tendencies toward perfectionism. Now, perfectionism is huge with ADHD. It isn't in the diagnostic criteria that doctors use to determine whether somebody has ADHD, but I'm not sure it shouldn't be, like, seriously. It's often a huge issue that really holds us back. You know, so many of us will absolutely do nothing at all rather than do something imperfectly. You know, we leave our homes in disarray because we don't have the time or energy to take care of them the right way. And then it feels like, you know, the moon and the stars and the planets have to align for us to get certain things done. We squander our creativity by leaving projects unfinished when they aren't turning out perfectly. You know, it goes on and on and on. And I think it's probably one of the most debilitating characteristics of ADD in adults. And it fuels our procrastination, it impedes our productivity, and it holds us back from reaching our potential. And if you've never thought of yourself as a perfectionist before, you may be in for a bit of an awakening. It shows up in all kinds of insidious ways. Personally, one of my biggest struggles with perfectionism was around housework. Remember I said, like, anything cleaning related is way, way low on the interest scale for me. But I used to have this really solidly entrenched belief that there was a right way to clean. And I know some of you can relate to this. So in an old house we had, when I was really struggling to stay on top of the housework piece, and you know, my ADD was pretty much run amok. We had ceramic tile in most of the downstairs of that house, and I believed that to clean the floor right, you know, it should be swept first, then scrubbed from corner to corner on my hands and knees with a bucket and a scrub brush and dried with a wet towel as I went. So, you know, how often do you think I actually cleaned that floor at all? Right? You know, given how low on the interest scale cleaning is for me, how often do you think I really found the time and the energy and the motivation to spend an entire afternoon scrubbing that stinking ceramic tile the way I thought it should be scrubbed? So you betcha if you answered, like, hardly ever, or only right before we had company, or when I couldn't stand it anymore, or when I was afraid the Department of Health was going to be knocking on my door, or something like that. But seriously, until I learned to recognize that that was perfectionism, and that my own perfectionism was the barrier that it was, and learned to change my thinking, it held me back in so many ways at home and at work. You know, my tendency toward perfectionism never really went away, but I've learned to be on the lookout for it always and how to address it when it rears its ugly head. And the internal self-talk, that blame and shame I'm always talking about, takes its toll too. So when we're in that blame and shame mindset, we really become stuck and we fail to follow through. And you've probably heard me say this, and I say this all the time, but when we're stuck in that blame and shame thinking, when we're stuck in a blame and shame mindset, we are absolutely 180 degrees from where we need to be able to solve our problems. Blame and shame thinking and problem-solving thinking are polar opposites. And those two ways of thinking are completely opposed to each other. So you can't be in both mindsets at the same time. So you will continue to struggle until you can end that blame and shame thinking. Think about it. And of course, you know, many of us, maybe all of us probably, struggle with what we call automatic negative thoughts, or ANTs. You've probably heard this expression before, but automatic negative thoughts, or ANTs, are the negative things we automatically, almost subconsciously, think about ourselves and the world around us. So these are thoughts that feel like facts that rise to the surface on their own, usually so quickly that we don't even notice that they may not be true and that they may not be in our best interest. They tend to be negative, obviously, hence the N, right, in automatic negative thoughts. They tend to be overgeneralizations. So they tend to have those absolute or extreme trigger words that should give you a clue that there are some beliefs popping up, like always, never, every time, those kind of overgeneralizations. They also tend to be taking responsibility for something that might not completely be your fault, so assuming that it's your fault, right? And they can tend to be catastrophizing, or what I call awfulizing, focusing on the worst-case scenario. So it's really important to question and challenge these automatic negative thoughts and beliefs when you notice them, and replace them with thoughts or statements that are more constructive for you. So ask yourself things like, you know, what real proof do I have that this is true when you catch yourself in a negative thought? And ask yourself, you know, what if the opposite were true, and so on. There are a whole series of questions that I will encourage my clients, but really it's all about noticing, challenging, and then replacing. So it all starts with awareness. So pay attention to your thoughts so that you can start to employ techniques to counter your ANTs with more positive, constructive thoughts. Things like positive affirmations can be really helpful. They're a great way to counter those ANTs, and a great way to start to replace those ANTs as the sort of the automatic neural pathway that your thoughts take. And a great way to set up some positive affirmations is to create positive opposite statements for those beliefs or for those ANTs that you can tell yourself repeatedly to start to change the path of your thoughts, right? To change those neural pathways, so to speak. But if the total positive opposite statement is too much for you to start to work with, you know, that's a problem for a lot of my clients, and it's a problem for me with things like affirmations and positive opposite thoughts, is I'm an eye roller, right? I'm very practical. I'm very sort of, people call me down to earth or grounded or whatever. So if I'm trying to tell myself something that's the positive opposite of a negative thought, and it's too hard to swallow, you know, I'm going to call BS on it. But you can try to find something more in the middle, something more positive, but not quite so extreme, to start to shift in a better direction. I hope that makes sense. I can answer questions on that at the end. But just remember, again, your biggest obstacle to overcoming your challenges may very well be the one between your ears. So I often tell my clients that the thinking piece can be the toughest nut to crack, but it can also be the most important. So when you get your head in line with what's possible, when you can start to believe in yourself and your potential again, there's really no stopping you. You know, you can start to untangle what really works for you, harness your natural strengths to fulfill your potential, and finally perform at the level of your abilities. So key number one was education. Key number two was support and accountability. Key number three is the thinking piece. And key number four is what I call the engineering perspective, or the scientific approach to solving your problems. This key is different, but it's important too. So in order to harness your strengths and your talents, which I'm going to talk more about in the fifth and final key, you need to adopt a different kind of perspective to your own challenges. And this goes back to that black and white or all or nothing thinking. Most of us, when we find Most of us, when we find something not working, right, when something starts to fall apart, whether it's a system or a tool or something that we've been doing that's been working, starts to fall apart, we tend to throw it all away, right? We throw the proverbial baby out with the bathwater. And then we start over from scratch with something brand new, a whole new system, a whole new way of doing things, the latest and greatest app, the latest and greatest something we saw on, you know, YouTube, we Google productivity, and we, you know, buy the latest whatever, and we try to implement something out of the box like that. Most of the time when my clients are doing this, they're focusing on the gap again, right? They're focusing on that gap between where they are and where they want to be, and they're not focusing on the improvement in that gap. Systems and tools and the way we do things, they're sort of like machines with lots of different moving parts and pieces and behaviors and things that all impact how well those systems, tools, and processes or whatever will work for us. So like a machine with a whole bunch of different gears that need to all be in working order and all be functioning smoothly, our tools and our systems and our ways of doing things that work for us have lots of pieces and lots of parts that are impacting whether or not they're helping us. So I help my clients start to shift their perspective on what they're doing to one more like an engineer, or what I call the scientific experimentation approach. So if you think about it, when an engineer is working on a machine, he looks at the individual pieces to see how each piece may need to be adjusted to improve how the machine as a whole performs, right? So when an assembly line or a production line breaks down, for example, the engineer doesn't scrap the whole thing and start from scratch. He goes into analysis mode. He goes into problem-solving mode, and he makes small incremental changes to the different components until everything is up and running again. Similarly, when a scientist is conducting an experiment, he doesn't scrap the whole experiment when something doesn't go the way he expects or when the outcome isn't what he wants. He manipulates each variable, each piece, one by one, very slowly, so that he can determine what specific changes impact the outcome. So if he changed everything all at once, he'd never know the cause and effect. He'd never know what made a difference in the experiment, right? So the same thing goes for you. You're never going to learn what works for you if you are constantly, you know, scrapping, if you are constantly starting from scratch. So start thinking about the things that you do and the way that you do them like a scientist would or like an engineer would, and look for how you can make small changes that yield improvements. And this perspective can be a game changer. It sounds kind of weird, but it's essential to understanding the fifth and the final key to harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenges. So again, key one was education. Key two was support and accountability. Key three was the thinking piece. Key four was that engineering perspective. And the fifth and final key to harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenges is what I call your unique operating system, or your UOS. Your natural success keys are the strengths you were born with. We all have them. Most of us have forgotten them. Most of us have become so focused on our challenges that we've either given up on them or we've become unaware of them. When you don't understand your own unique operating system, you are investing a ton of time and energy and probably money, trying to plug yourself into someone else's system and way of doing things, only to end up feeling frustrated and feeling like you've failed again. Many of us, ADDers, people like you and me who have creative, out-of-the-box thinking brains, who struggle to stay organized, who struggle to stay focused and productive, are less than effective because we're working against our strengths rather than with them. We try hard every day, but we feel like we're coming up short of our potential because we can't seem to stay in front of our to-dos, our calendars, and our responsibilities consistently. And it's not a coincidence that most of us who feel like we're underperforming are trying to plug ourselves into someone else's way of doing things, someone else's system, someone else's tools. You know, once in a while we might get lucky and find something that sticks for a while, but most of the time those changes are short-lived. So you might do well in the beginning when you're full of excitement and hope, you know, when the interest is high because it's new and novel and shiny, but you can't sustain the required effort for the long haul. So most of the time, those changes don't last in any meaningful way that you can rely on. So you try another system, another gadget, another gizmo, another app, another book, whatever, and you start from scratch over and over and over again, hoping to find the one, right? I always think of like the Prince Charming metaphor from Cinderella, looking for that glass, magical glass slipper that, you know, is your fits like a glove, you know, productivity system or, you know, whatever. Eventually, you know, you lose hope and you feel like a failure all over again. And I know it sounds familiar to many of you because these are kinds of things I hear from clients all the time, but you're definitely not alone. You know, many of my clients come to me calling themselves, you know, GTD dropouts or Covey failures or bullet journal bombs, and most of my clients are extremely well-versed in productivity and organizational methods and theory. They're well-read and they sure are well-practiced, right? And most of them have bought into far more than their share of gadgets and gizmos and gurus with very little lasting change to show for it. They spend a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of money trying to plug themselves into someone else's operating system. I often say it's like running a Windows program on a Mac and vice versa. It just doesn't work. Because the systems and solutions that work best for you are not in an app or a book or a planner. They're in your unique operating system. Because what comes naturally to you is what's easiest for you. And what's easiest for you requires less effort for positive payback. Remember that dopamine deficiency, right? So when we are on the in that like right balance between effort and payback, that dopamine deficiency, that motivation struggle becomes a non-issue. So uncovering your unique operating systems, uncovering your strengths, and learning how to apply what already comes naturally to you to the areas where you struggle is the key to unlocking your potential. So simplistically, I'm going to give you the 6 basic components of your unique operating system, and then I'll give you some steps that you can take to start to tap into them. So the first one is your processing style. That's how you learn and how you process information naturally. Your organizational style, how you organize information and physical objects and space naturally. Interests, what stimulates you, what gets your motor running, right? What you find interesting is unique to you. Number 4 is your habits, what you already do regularly, what is consistent for you, what already works. Number 5 is your energy flow, how your physical and your mental energy and your focus ebbs and flows throughout the day. And then number 6 is your beliefs and your values, you know, how you see yourself, how you see the world, how you see right and wrong, what's important to you, what motivates you. Those are all part of your beliefs and your values. So when you're using your natural strengths, your natural talents, and your natural inclinations, your natural habits, your natural energy flow, it's easier to be consistent. It's easier to stick with what you're doing, which in turn makes it more likely that you're going to follow through longer, right? And consistency and follow-through are fundamental to making lasting change. So I'm going to give you some simple steps you can take today to start to tap into your own unique operating system. And I have 6 of these steps. So first, identify your processing style. You know, how do you remember things most easily? Do you repeat them to yourself in your mind or out loud? Do you picture them in your mind? Do you touch them, or is there something else that you do? There are lots of exercises you can do to help you uncover how you naturally process information. Most of us have a combination of processing styles that are natural to us. So when we work with our natural processing style, life is much easier. Next, identify your organizational style. Are you a pile maker? Do you tend to cluster like things together? Do you need certain areas clear and uncluttered to function well, while other areas can be a mess without impacting you much? You know, creating systems and tools that work with your natural organizational style rather than against it can make it easier for you to be consistent and improve your performance. Number 3, take note of your energy flow. So each of us has a natural rhythm to our energy throughout the day. You know, there are peaks and valleys in clarity, focus, and processing power and physical energy that sort of ebb and flow throughout each day. So pay attention to your high spots and your low spots and try to plan your activities correspondingly as you can. And for those low spots, you know, play with what might help them be a little less low. You know, eating a good nutritious snack, moving your body a little bit, getting a little bit of exercise or getting the blood pumping or doing a high interest activity at the beginning to give yourself a boost of dopamine might help make those low spots a little less low. And try working with your natural energy flow to make a big difference in your overall productivity. Number 4, identify what already works. So what are you already doing that's working? For example, like, what are the things that you never or very rarely misplace? And don't tell me there aren't any, because I guarantee you I could help you find some. So look at your favorite activities, your hobbies, your pastimes. You know, very few avid golfers are going to misplace their favorite shoes, and very few devoted fishermen are going to misplace their favorite rods. And I promise you there's something if you look. So ask yourself, you know, what are you doing with those things, or how are you thinking about those things that's different from the things you frequently look for, and build on what works rather than trying to reinvent the wheel all the time. It's a much faster path to success. Number 5, identify your most solid habits. So what habits do you have that are almost as sure as the rising and setting sun? You know, what are the common threads among those habits? What about those habits is easy for you? You know, what's the payback? Those habits are the cornerstone of your own natural foundation of structure. And then finally, get clear on your strengths. What are you good at? What do you do so easily that you've forgotten that others might struggle with it? You know, what do people often come to you for help with? What is second nature for you that people around you often lean on? And this one is really hard for many of my clients, but it's an important one to look for or look at for uncovering natural strengths. So when you can learn your strengths and appreciate them, you can apply them to your areas of struggle and compensate more easily for the things you're not great at. So you have the keys to your own success inside of you. Uncovering your unique operating system is essential to making the most of your time, energy, and abilities. Working with your natural strengths and tendencies and talents, you know, your UOS, your unique operating system, is the key to unlocking your potential. It's really fundamental to the work I do with my clients in developing systems and tools and solutions they need to bring their performance up to the level of their abilities. It's how I help them get their performance in sync with their potential and go from stuck to unstoppable. So I hope you've learned a lot. I know I throw a lot into these webinars, but I'll be answering questions in a few minutes if you're listening live, and of course you can go back and listen to the replay as well. But the five keys to harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenge are so important to understand, but it really is just the beginning. And of course, there's so much more to it than what I can give you here, you know, in just shy of an hour. But of course, you need to understand your ADHD and have the right support and accountability and get the thinking piece under control and the engineering perspective and tap into your UOS. But if you don't know how to make this work for you, you know you're not going to use it, right? And if you're not going to actually use this information, if you're not going to actually use the keys, your life is going to go on exactly as it is now. And you know that's not what you want, and that's not what I want for you, because that's not what you're capable of. You know, you don't want to continue to fall short and not follow through. So it's important to take the information you learned here tonight, build on it, and put it into practice. And I'd like to offer you a way to do that that's easy, it's easily understandable, it's easy to follow along with, and you can put some of these principles into work immediately to help you improve your follow-through and your performance in just a few weeks. So it's the kind of stuff that I help my private coaching clients create in the work that we do together. But of course, I can only work with so many clients at a time, and I can only help so many people on a one-to-one basis. So I created the Push Past Procrastination Program, and that's how I help more people improve their follow-through and start to perform at the level of their abilities. So registration for the program is open, and it's already starting to fill. So you can check it out at www.pushpastprocrastination.com. And you know, it's a 6-week group program. I've made some improvements to it since the last time I ran it, and I've added more live support and more practical tools to help you keep moving after the program is over. And for the first 5 people who sign up from this webinar and send me an email through my website telling me they came from this addclasses.com webinar, I'm going to give you a bonus one-on-one strategy call with you to help you get the most out of the program. So my calendar is super full these days, so I can only do it for the first 5. So make sure you send me an email, you know, to tell me that you found the program through addclasses.com. And for anyone else who's listening, you know, beyond those 5, if you use the promo code LETSPPP, so Push Past Procrastination, you know, get it? So LETS, LETSPPP, all one word, you'll get 10% off the program price. For listening to this webinar. So check it out at www.pushpastprocrastination.com. And I'm happy to answer your questions about harnessing your strengths to manage your ADHD challenges. Tara, do we have any questions in the chat box?
Yes, we do. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yep.
Okay, great, because I have myself on mute twice, so I didn't make noise when you were talking.
Been there, done that, yes.
Yeah. All right, we had one, and if you're listening live, you can scroll down under questions and type a question in for Lynn. We did have one so far, and can you repeat what the blank was in your biggest obstacle is the one between your blank? A couple people missed that.
Ears. Your biggest ears, obstacle okay. is the one between your ears, right? It's not your systems. It's not your tools. It's not your willpower. It's not your work ethic. It's not your character. It's not your morals. It's the one between your ears. That's
okay.
a big one, really big one.
All right, and if you are listening, make sure you're typing the questions under questions and not in the chat room. Let's see if we have any more yet. I don't know, Lynn. Maybe you answered everyone's questions.
I think I know I talk quickly. Everyone always tells me that, and I throw a lot into these because I don't want you guys to get like the same old fluff. I really want everybody to walk away with things that they can use. I mean, you know, I appreciate everyone's time and attention, and you know, it's this helping people with ADHD reach their potential is something I'm super passionate about. I've been a coach for 12 years now, and it's just so incredible to have someone come who is underperforming and frustrated and really starting to lose, you know, faith in themselves, and to see them turn themselves around and really, I mean, every one of us has some, I'm going to get carried away, but every one of us has some great things that we are capable of doing and some, you know, reasons that we were put on this planet and things we have to give. And ADHD can really get in the way of all of that. The practical stuff that we struggle with, the behaviors, the, you know, the organization, the, you know, all of those things, procrastination and poor time management, you know, really keep us from performing at the level that we're really capable of. And it's, you know, something I'm really passionate in helping, you know, people with ADHD, you know, really start to believe in themselves again and really start to to perform at the level of their abilities.
We've had quite a few questions coming in. I think there's a little bit of lag, delay on the broadcast.
Okay. Like, if I talk enough, then people are going to ask more questions. So.
Yeah. Well, people have to process. I think people are shy and don't always want to ask questions. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you
that.
For a great presentation. I often want to run away from my ADD by tuning out more or using caffeine or sugar, but these make my situation worse. Any advice on staying present while being distracted?
Oh, that's so huge. I mean, we should do a whole another webinar on that.
We'll have to do one.
It's a skill you can learn with practice, right? But it's not easy. So mindfulness, meditation kinds of things, if, you know, a lot of us with ADHD, like, you know, shudder at the thought of meditation. But there are some really simple ways that you can meditate that really aren't, you know, aren't making your mind completely blank, because I don't know about you. I can only make my mind blank for like a nanosecond and then something's popping in.
God,
but
no.
Guided meditations, there are apps out there that are free that you can do, you know, guided meditations, practicing being still. One of my favorite things that I, you know, encourage clients to do is deep breathing. So you can Google like deep breathing exercises for focus, or deep breathing exercises. We call it diaphragmatic breathing. Breathing from through your diaphragm actually gives your brain more, and gives your organs and everything, your lungs more oxygen, so that it makes you a little bit more calm. It makes you a little bit more clear, helps you with focus. If your brain starts running away with you, if, you know, that's the way I always frame it. If you woke the mental gerbils up, or the thought gerbils, and your brain's really, you know, sort of running amok, deep breathing can do wonders to slow all of that down. So, you know, look for some guided meditations, some mindfulness practices. Staying present is hard when you have ADHD, but it's definitely something you can learn to do more easily, especially if you increase your awareness on, you know, when it's happening. So, you know, if you can notice, if there are people around you that you love and that you trust that are good sources of support, that can tell you or give you some sort of quiet, you know, clue or cue that, you know, you're wandering or, you know, you're not paying attention, then you can correct and bring yourself back. And the more you bring yourself back when you catch yourself being unfocused, the more you can start to regulate your attention to begin with. I hope that helps.
Okay. Yeah, now we have a lot in. And I apologize, but we're not going to be able to get to all of the questions this evening because we only have a few more minutes left. But we'll try to get to some good ones, or I shouldn't say good, the ones that came in first.
Right.
I find myself struggling constantly with consistency whenever I try to implement a productivity program. If something is actually working for one day, it might not work for me the day after. What can I do about this?
I guarantee you, if that's the case, then you're trying to do things that are not natural for you, right? You've got to remember, we struggle. We are deficient in dopamine, the neurochemical that makes us feel feelings of motivation for things that aren't naturally motivating. And you can't force yourself to feel motivated about a productivity system forever. It's just not, it's not possible. So when you're doing things in a way that's more natural for you, it's going to require less effort. So that, I always think of it as like less effort and payback are sort of like on a balance. You have to be in the right balance in the amount of effort you're putting into something and the payback you see from it. If you're putting too much effort into something because you're not working in a way that's natural to you, then it's going to be really hard for you to see that effort as being worthwhile and to be able to maintain that. And it's, again, it's not a matter of of, you know, you not wanting it. It's a matter of you not working with your natural strengths and tendencies.
Okay. What is an example of an organizational style or a processing style?
So your processing styles, you know, if you can Google like examples of learning styles and learning style assessments. Most of them are geared toward kids, but it's this, you know, how you learn things essentially is how you process things, like how you process information most efficiently and most effectively. So some of us have a really strong visual component. So when I'm looking for something, you know, I can picture the color of paper that it's on. You know, I can sort of picture where I had it last, and I can almost see what I'm looking for in my mind's eye. So I have a very strong visual component. I also learn things really easily, or much more easily, when I have some sort of an auditory component. So when I hear them, like I can remember songs from 40 years ago that I never even really liked. Like it's just this weird. If I could remember, you know, what I walked into a room for, as well as I can remember songs from 40 years ago, I'd be golden. But, you know, so paying attention to your processing style is huge. Most of us organize things naturally in really weird, like quirky ways that aren't necessarily what would make sense to someone else. But if you don't honor that weird sort of quirky way that you organize things, you're probably trying to put somebody else's system into place, and it's going to be harder for you to maintain it. So, you know, I'm a pile maker, but I have to have controlled piles, for example. I tend to be better if I organize things personally, you know, everybody's different, by similarity more than by what would make sense to someone else. So things that are similar sort of in my mind belong together. So that's the way I organize things. Some people are going to organize things more linearly. You know, my husband's an engineer, so everything he does is linear. So pay attention to what you don't lose. Pay attention to what you can find pretty reliably, and then look at, you know, how you're organizing, where you're storing, how you're thinking about how you use that thing, or, you know, when you're looking for it, what you're looking for, and that'll give you some clues to how you organize naturally. Hope that makes sense.
Yes. Okay. We are actually at the end of the hour, and then we did have a bunch of questions about the Push Past Procrastination program. So if you have a question about the program specifics, contact Lynn, click the link, go to her website, and contact her through her website about that. But before
Absolutely.
We get going, Lynn, do you have any quick final thoughts you'd like to share tonight? And thank you so much for this great webinar.
Sure. I'm sorry I didn't get to more questions. You know, feel free to reach out to me through my website if you have questions that I didn't get a chance to answer on this. Really, the thing that I want everyone to walk away with more than anything is that you have amazing gifts and strengths and talents that you're really not using, you know, to their full advantage. And when you can start to use your own strengths, your own, no matter how quirky, ways of doing things, to manage your life more effectively, everything gets easier. And when things are easier, you don't need motivation. You don't need, you know, consistency. It comes more naturally, right? You don't have to manufacture motivation. You don't have to try to manufacture interest. You're not constantly feeling like you've got to pull up your own big girl panties to be able to accomplish what you need to accomplish. It just, everything happens more easily. And when you're in that easier place, you know, life is better, and that's really when it's, you know, you're so much more likely to sustain and be consistent. Hope that helps.
That's great. All right. Thank you so much, Lynn, Edith, and thank you, everyone, for listening to tonight's webinar. Have a great night, everyone. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Tara.
Thank you.